Some concertos are rarely played for a reason, but why others are neglected is a real mystery. Take Szymanowski's second violin concerto. It's colourful, energetic, and dramatic. Not only does it have a fabulous violin part, but the orchestration is beautiful. As the soloist, I often feel like I'm riding on the top of a wave of marvellous sound. I'm Tasmin Little, and I'm playing Szymanowski's second violin concerto with the BBC Symphony Orchestra and conductor Edward Gardner. Join us in experiencing this vibrant concerto on Radio 3 in concert tomorrow at 7:30.
Now on Radio 3, 9 o'clock, a production of Manfred, a dramatic poem completed by Lord Byron in 1817. It begins with an introduction from Radio 3 new generation thinker Gregory Tait from St Andrews University.
Manfred is written in unrhymed blank verse for the most part. It is sort of interwoven with songs and rhymed poems, usually spoken by the spirits, in contrast to the blank verse of Manfred's language. Manfred exemplifies Byron's ambition to write what he described as a mental theatre. The dialogues in the poem, particularly with the host of supernatural spirits that Manfred conjures, are designed to dramatise the divisions within the mind of the title character. He is dabbling with these supernatural powers in order to gain knowledge of life and death, which should properly be forbidden to humanity. So he's a transgressive figure. Byron published Manfred in 1817, soon after he'd separated from his wife in 1816, amid scandalous rumours of an incestuous affair with his half-sister, Augusta. And that relationship between Byron and Augusta is very possibly the influence behind the relationship between Manfred and Astarte, which is the emotional drive of the poem. That is one source of Manfred's suffering and his agony and his guilt. But there's another way of thinking about Astarte as well, which is as a representation of an ideal of love, which would transcend the messiness of real relationships. After his separation, Byron fled London, where he'd enjoyed several years of fame, to travel around Europe, and he never returned to England. Like Byron, Manfred is an exile, separated from Astarte, the one person he loves, and he admits that he has no sympathy with other people. He prefers the solitude of the sublime landscapes of the Alps, through which Byron travelled in 1816. And although Byron's poem is partly a retelling of the Faust story, with its protagonist who seeks forbidden knowledge from supernatural powers, Manfred consistently rejects the authority of the spirits. And in that sense, he has more in common with the Satan of Milton's Paradise Lost than with Faust. Manfred's character is a typically Byronic mix. His personality is aristocratic, but his politics are democratic. He refuses to kneel to arbitrary power, just as Byron spoke out against political oppression throughout his life. And despite his isolation, Manfred is for Byron a representative figure. One of the most important psychological tensions explored in the poem is the opposition between Manfred's unbounded intellectual aspirations and his self-torturing emotional frailties. He is, as he says of humanity in general, half dust, half deity.
The lamp must be replenished. But even then, it will not burn so long as I must watch my slumbers, if I slumber, are not sleep, but a continuance of enduring thought, which then I can resist not. In my heart, there is a vigil, and these eyes but close to look within. And yet I live, and bear the aspect and the form of breathing men. But grief should be the instructor of the wise. Sorrow is knowledge. They who know the most must mourn the deepest o'er the fatal truth. The tree of knowledge is not that of life. philosophy and science and the springs of wonder and the wisdom of the world I have essayed. And in my mind there is a power to make these subject to itself. But they avail not. I have done men good, and I have met with good even among men, but this availed not. I have had my foes, and none have baffled, many fallen before me, but this availed not. Good or evil, life, powers, passions, all I see in other beings have been to me as rain unto the sands, since that all nameless hour. I have no dread, and feel the curse to have no natural fear, nor fluttering throb that beats with hopes or wishes, or lurking love of something on the earth. Now, to my task. Mysterious agency, ye spirits of the unbounded universe, whom I have sought in darkness and in light, ye who do compass earth about and dwell in subtler essence, ye to whom the tops of mountains inaccessible are haunts, and earths and oceans caves familiar things, I call upon ye by the written charm which gives me power upon you. Rise, appear. Now by the voice of him who is the first among you, by this sign which makes you tremble, by the claims of him who is undying, rise, appear. Appear. If it be so, spirits of earth and air, ye shall not thus elude me by a power deeper than all yet urged, a tyrant spell, which had its birthplace in a star condemned, the burning wreck of a demolished world, a wandering hell in the eternal space, by the strong curse which is upon my soul, the thought which is within me and around me, I do compel ye to my will appear. Summer's sunset gilds. Though thy quest may be forbidden on a starbeam, I have written, to thine adjuration bowed. Mortal, be thy wish avowed.
Mont Blanc is the monarch of the mountains. They crowned him long ago on a throne of rocks, in a robe of clouds with a diadem of snow. Around his waist are forests braced, the avalanche in his hand. But ere it fall, that thundering ball must pause for my command. I am the spirit of the place, could make the mountain bow and quiver to its caverned base. And what with me wouldst thou?
In the blue depth of the waters, where the wave hath no strife, where the wind is a stranger and the sea snake hath life, where the mermaid is decking her green hair with shells, like the storm on the surface came the sound of thy spells. O'er my calm hall of coral, the deep echo rolled. To the spirit of ocean, thy wishes unfold.
Where a slumbering earthquake lies pillowed on fire, and the lakes of bitumen rise boilingly higher, where the roots of the Andes strike deep in the earth, I have quitted my birthplace, thy bidding to bide. Thy spell hath subdued me. Thy will be my guide.
I am the rider of the wind, the stirrer of the storm. The hurricane I left behind is yet with lightning warm. To speed to thee, o'er shore and sea, I swept upon the blast. The fleet I met sailed well, and yet 'twill sink ere night be past.
My dwelling is the shadow of the night. Why doth thy magic torture me with light?
The star which rules thy destiny was ruled ere Earth began by me. Space bosom not a lovelier star. The hour arrived, and it became a wandering mass of shapeless flame, a pathless comet, and a curse, the menace of the universe, still rolling on with innate force, without a sphere, without a course, a bright deformity on high, the monster of the upper sky. And thou, beneath its influence born, thou worm, whom I obey and scorn, forced by a power which is not thine, and lent thee but to make thee mine, for this brief moment to descend, where these weak spirits round thee bend, and parley with a thing like thee. What wouldst thou, child of clay, with me?
Earth.
Ocean.
Air. Night.
Mountains. Winds.
Thy star.
Are at thy beck and bidding, child of clay. Before thee at thy quest their spirits are. What wouldst thou with us, son of mortals, say?
Forgetfulness.
Of what? Of whom and why?
Of that which is within me. Read it there. Ye know it, and I cannot utter it. We can but give thee that which we possess. Ask of a subject's sovereignty, the power o'er earth, the whole or portion or a sign which shall control the elements whereof we are the dominators, each and all. These shall be thine. Oblivion, self-oblivion, can ye not wring from out the hidden realms ye offer so profusely what I ask?
It is not in our essence, in our skill, but thou mayst die.
Will death bestow it on me?
We are immortal, and do not forget. We are eternal, and to us the past is as the future present. Art thou answered?
Ye mock me, but the power which brought ye here hath made you mine. Slaves, scoff not at my will. The mind, the spirit, the Promethean spark, the lightning of my being is as bright, pervading, and far-darting as your own, and shall not yield to yours, though cooped in clay. Answer, or I will teach you what I am.
The things mortals call death have naught to do with us.
I then have called ye from your realms in vain. Ye cannot, or ye will not, aid me.
What we possess, we offer. It is thine.
Kingdom and sway and strength and length of days.
Accursed! What have I to do with days? They are too long already. Hence, begone.
Yet pause. Being here, our will would do thee service. Bethink thee, is there then no other gift which he can make not worthless in thine eyes?
No, none. Yet stay, one moment, ere we part. I would behold ye face to face. I hear your voices, and I see the steady aspect of a clear, large star, but nothing more. Approach me, as ye are, or one or all in your accustomed forms.
We have no forms beyond the elements.
But choose a form, in that we will appear.
I have no choice. There is no form on earth hideous or beautiful to me. Let him who is most powerful of ye take such aspect as unto him may seem most fitting. Come.
Behold. Here. See.
Astarte. Oh, God. If it be thus, and thou art not a madness and a mockery, I yet might be most happy. I will clasp thee, and we again will be...
I am gone. Farewell.
No. Come back. My heart is crushed. Which hath strength to kill.
From thy own heart I then did wring.
The black blood in its blackest spring.
From thy own smile I snatched the snake.
For there it coiled as in a brake.
From thy own lip I drew the charm.
Which gave all these their chiefest harm.
In proving every poison known.
I found the strongest was thine own.
By thy cold breast and serpent smile, by thy unfathomed gulfs of guile, by that most seeming virtuous eye, by thy shut soul's hypocrisy, by the perfection of thine art, which passed for human thine own heart, by thy delight in others' pain, and by thy brotherhood of Cain, I call upon thee and compel thyself to be thy proper hell. And on thy head I pour the vial, which doth devote thee to this trial, nor to slumber, nor to die, shall be in thy destiny. Though thy death shall still seem near to thy wish, but as a fear. Lo, the spell now works around thee, and the clankless chain hath bound thee. O'er thy heart and brain together hath the word been passed. Now, whither?
Spells which I have studied baffle me. Remedy I recked of tortured me. I lean no more on superhuman aid. It hath no power upon the past. And for the future, till the past be gulfed in darkness, it is not of my search.
My mother Earth! And thou fresh breaking day, and you... Ye mountains! Why are ye beautiful? I cannot love ye. And thou, the bright eye of the universe that openst over all and unto all art a delight, thou shinest not on my heart.
And you... Ye crags upon whose extreme edge I stand, and on the torrent's brink beneath, behold the tall pines dwindled as to shrubs, in dizziness of distance, when a leap, a stir, a motion, even a breath, would bring my breast upon its rocky bosom's bed, to rest forever. Wherefore do I pause? I feel the impulse. Yet I do not plunge. I see the peril. Yet I do not recede. And my brain reels. And yet my foot is firm. There is a power upon me which withholds and makes it my fatality to live. If it be life to wear within myself this barrenness of spirit and to be my own soul's sepulchre. For I have ceased to justify my deeds unto myself. The last infirmity of evil.
I, eagle, thou winged and cloud-cleaving minister, whose happy flight is highest into heaven, well mayest thou swoop so near me. I should be thy prey and gorge thine eaglets. Thou art gone. Where the eye cannot follow thee, but thine yet pierces downward, onward, or above with a pervading vision. Beautiful. How beautiful is all this visible world. How glorious in its action and itself. But we, who who name ourselves its sovereigns, we, half dust, half deity, alike unfit to sink or soar, with our mixed essence make a conflict of its elements and breathe the breath of degradation and of pride, contending with low wants and lofty will till our mortality predominates, and men are what they name not to themselves and trust not to each other. Hark, the note, the natural music of the mountain reed, mixed with the sweet bells of the sauntering herd. My soul would drink those echoes. Oh, that I were the viewless spirit of a lovely sound, a living voice, a breathing harmony, a bodiless enjoyment born and dying with the blessed tone which made me.
Even so, this way the chamois leapt, and nimble feet have baffled me. My gains today will scarce repay my breakneck travail. What's here? Who seems not of my trade, and yet hath reached a height which none even of our mountaineers, save our best hunters, may attain. His garb is goodly, his mien manly, and his air proud as a freeborn peasant at this distance. I'll approach him nearer.
To be thus grey-haired with anguish, like these blasted pines, wrecks of a single winter, barkless, branchless, a blighted trunk upon a cursed root which but supplies a feeling to decay, and to be thus eternally but thus, having been otherwise, now furrowed o'er with wrinkles ploughed by moments, not by years and hours, all tortured into ages. Hours which I outlive. Ye toppling crags of ice, ye avalanches, whom a breath draws down in mountainous overwhelming, come and crush me! Ye pass, and only fall on things that still would live, on the young flourishing forest, or the hut and hamlet of the harmless villager.
The mists begin to rise from up the valley. I warn him to descend, or he may chance to lose at once his way and life together.
The mists boil up around the glaciers. Clouds rise, curling fast beneath me, white and sulfury, like foam from the roused ocean of deep hell, whose every wave breaks on a living shore, heaped with the damned like pebbles. I am giddy.
I must approach him cautiously. If near, sudden step will startle him, and he seems tottering already.
Mountains have fallen, leaving a gap in the clouds, and with the shock, rocking their alpine brethren, filling up the ripe green valleys with destruction splinters, damming the rivers with a sudden dash which crushed the waters into mist and made their fountains find another channel. Thus, in its old age, did Mount Rosenberg. Why stood I not beneath it?
Friend, have a care. Your next step may be fatal. For the love of him who made you, stand not on that brink.
Farewell, ye opening heavens. Look not upon me thus reproachfully. Ye were not meant for me. Earth, take these atoms.
Hold, madman! Though aweary of thy life, stain not up pure veils with thy guilty blood. Away with me! I will not quit my hold.
I am most sick at heart, and grasp me not. I am all feebleness. The mountains whirl, spinning around me. I grow blind. What art thou?
I'll answer that anon. Away with me! The clouds grow thicker. There. Now lean on me. Place your foot here. Take this staff and cling a moment to that shrub.
Give me a hand.
And hold fast by my girdle. Softly. Well, the chalet will be gained within an hour. Come on. We'll quickly find a surer footing and something like a pathway which the torrent hath washed since winter. Come. That's bravely done. You should have been a hunter. Follow me. No, yet pause. Thou must not yet go forth. Thy mind and body are alike unfit to trust each other for some hours at least. When thou art better, I'll be thy guide. But whither?
It imports not. I do know my route full well and need no further guidance.
Thy garb and gait bespeak thee of high lineage. One of the many chiefs whose castled crags look o'er the lower valleys. Which of these may call thee lord? I only know the portals. My way of life leads me but rarely down to bask by the huge hearths of those old halls, carousing with the vassals. But the paths which step from out our mountains to their doors I know from childhood. Which of these is thine?
No matter.
Well, sir, pardon me the question, and be a bit of cheer. Come, taste my wine. 'Tis of an ancient vintage. Many a day it has thawed my veins among our glaciers. Now let it do thus for thine. Come, pledge me fairly.
Away, away. There's blood upon the brim. Oh, God, will it never, never sink in the earth?
What does that mean? Thy senses wander from this.
I say it is blood. My blood, the pure, warm stream which ran in the veins of my fathers and in ours when we were in our youth and had one heart and loved each other as we should not love. And this was shed, but still it rises up, colouring the clouds that shut me out of heaven where thou art not and I shall never be.
Man of strange words and some half-maddening sin which makes thee people vacancy, whate'er thy dread and sufferance be. There's comfort yet, the aid of holy men and heavenly patience.
Patience and patience, hence! That word was made for brutes of burthen, not for birds of prey. Preach it to mortals of a dust like thine. I am not of thine order.
Thanks to heaven. I would not be of thine for the free fame of William Tell. But whatsoever thine ill, it must be borne. And these wild starts are useless.
Do I not bear it? Look on me. I live.
This is convulsion and no healthful life.
I tell thee, man, I have lived many years, many long years, but they are nothing now to those which I must number. Ages, ages, space and eternity, and consciousness with the fierce thirst of death and still unslaked.
Why, on thy brow the seal of middle age has scarce been set. I am thine elder far.
But think'st thou existence doth depend on time? It doth, but actions are our epochs. Mine have made my days and nights imperishable, endless, and all alike as sands on the shore, innumerable atoms and one desert, barren and cold, on which the wild waves break, but nothing rests save carcasses and wrecks, rocks and the salt surf weeds of bitterness.
Alas, he's mad, but yet I must not leave him.
I would I were, for then the things I see could be but a distempered dream.
What is he? What dost thou see or think'st thou looks upon?
Myself and thee, a peasant of the Alps, thy humble virtues, hospitable home and spirit patient, pious, proud and free, thy self-respect, grafted on innocent thoughts, thy days of health and nights of sleep, thy toils by danger dignified yet guiltless, hopes of cheerful old age and a quiet grave with cross and garland over its green turf and thy grandchildren's love for epitaph. This do I see. And then I look within. It matters not. My soul was scorched already.
And wouldst thou then exchange thy lot for mine?
No, friend. I would not wrong thee, nor exchange my lot with living being. I can bear However wretchedly, 'tis still to bear in life what others could not brook to dream, but perish in their slumber.
And with this cautious feeling for another's pain, canst thou be black with evil? Say not so. Can one of gentle thoughts have wreaked revenge upon his enemies?
Oh, no. My injuries came down on those who loved me, on those whom I best loved. I never quelled an enemy, save in my just defence, but my embrace was fatal.
Heaven give thee rest, and penitence restore thee to thyself. My prayers shall be for thee.
I need them not, but can endure thy pity. I depart.
Ah,
'tis time. Farewell. Here's gold and thanks for thee. No words. It is thy due. And follow me not. I know my path. The mountain's perils past. Once again, I charge thee. Follow not.
It is not noon. The sunbow's rays still arch the torrent with the many hues of heaven and roll the sheeted silver's waving column over the crags headlong perpendicular and fling its lines of foaming light along and to and fro like the pale courser's tail. The Gianni steed to be bestrode by death as told in the apocalypse. No eyes but mine now drink this sight of loveliness. I should be sole in this sweet solitude, and with the spirit of the place divide the homage of these waters. I will call her.
Beautiful spirit, witch of the Alps, with thy hair of light and dazzling eyes of glory, in whose form the charms of Earth's least mortal daughters grow to an unearthly stature, in an essence of purer elements. Beautiful spirit, witch of the Alps, in thy calm, clear brow, wherein is glassed serenity of soul, which of itself shows immortality, I read that thou wilt pardon to a son of Earth, whom the obtruser powers permit at times to commune with them, if that he avail him of his spells to call thee thus and gaze on thee a moment.
Son of Earth, I know thee and the powers which give thee power. I know thee for a man of many thoughts and deeds of good and ill. Extreme in both, fatal and fated in thy sufferings. I have expected this. What wouldst thou with me?
To look upon thy beauty, nothing further. The face of the earth hath maddened me, and I take refuge in her mysteries and pierce to the abodes of those who govern her, but they can nothing aid me. I have sought from them what they could not bestow, and now I search no further.
What could be the quest which is not in the power of the most powerful, the rulers of the invisible?
A boon? But why should I repeat it? 'Twere in vain.
I know not that. Let thy lips utter it.
Well, though it torture me, 'tis but the same. My pang shall find a voice. From my youth upwards, my spirit walked not with the souls of men, nor looked upon the earth with human eyes. The thirst of their ambition was not mine. The aim of their existence was not mine. My joys, my griefs, my passions, and my powers made me a stranger. Though I wore the form, I had no sympathy with breathing flesh, nor midst the creatures of clay that girded me was there but one who
but of her anon. I said, with men and with the thoughts of men, I held but slight communion, but instead my joy was in the wilderness, to breathe the difficult air of the iced mountain's top, where the birds dare not build, nor insects' wing flit o'er the herbless granite, or to plunge into the torrent and to roll along on the swift whirl of the new-breaking wave of river stream or ocean in their flow. In these my early strength exulted. Or to follow through the night the moving moon, the stars and their development, or catch the dazzling lightnings till my eyes grew dim. Or to look, listening, on the scattered leaves while autumn winds were at their evening song. Then I passed the nights of years in sciences, untaught save in the old time, and with time and toil and terrible ordeal and such penance as in itself hath power upon the air and spirits that do compass air and earth, space and the peopled infinite, I made mine eyes familiar with eternity. And with my knowledge grew the thirst of knowledge and the power and joy of this most bright intelligence until...
Proceed.
I but thus prolonged my words, boasting these idle attributes, because as I approach the core of my heart's grief... But to my task. I have not named to thee father or mother, mistress, friend, or being with whom I wore the chain of human ties. If I had such, they seemed not such to me. Yet there was one.
Spare not thyself. Proceed.
She was like me. In lineaments, her eyes, her hair, her features, all to the very tone even of her voice, they said were like to mine, but softened all and tempered into beauty. She had the same lone thoughts and wanderings, the quest of hidden knowledge and a mind to comprehend the universe. Nor these alone, but with them gentler powers than mine, pity and smiles and tears which I had not, and tenderness, but that I had for her, humility, and that I never had. Her faults were mine, her virtues were her own. I loved her and destroyed her.
With thy hand?
Not with my hand, but heart, which broke her heart. It gazed on mine and withered. I have shed blood, but not hers. And yet her blood was shed. I saw and could not stanch it.
And for this, a being of the race thou dost despise, the order which thine own would rise above, mingling with us and ours, thou dost forego the gifts of our great knowledge and shrinks back to recreant mortality. Away.
Daughter of air, I tell thee, since that hour... But words are breath. Look on me in my sleep, or watch my watchings. Come and sit by me. My solitude is solitude no more, but peopled with the Furies. I have gnashed my teeth in darkness till returning morn, then cursed myself till sunset. I have prayed for madness as a blessing. 'Tis denied me. I have affronted death, but in the war of elements the waters shrunk from me, and fatal things passed harmless. The cold hand of an all-pitiless demon held me back by a single hair which would not break. In fantasy, imagination, all the affluence of my soul, which one day was a Croesus in creation, I plunged deep, but like an ebbing wave it dashed me back into the gulf of my unfathomed thought. I plunged amidst mankind. Forgetfulness I sought in all, save where 'tis to be found. And that I have to learn. My sciences, my long-pursued and superhuman art is mortal here.
I dwell in my despair and live. And live forever.
It may be that I can aid thee.
To do this, thy power must wake the dead or lay me low with them. Do so in any shape, in any hour, with any torture, so it be the last.
That is not in my province. But if thou wilt swear obedience to my will and do my bidding, it may help thee to thy wishes.
I will not swear. Obey? And whom? The spirits whose presence I command, and be the slave of those who served me? Never.
Is this all? Hast thou no gentler answer? Yet bethink thee, and pause ere thou rejectest.
I have said it.
Enough. I may retire then. Say.
Retire. And she disappears. We are all the fools of time and terror. Days steal on us and steal from us, yet we live, loathing our life and dreading still to die. In all the days of this detested yoke, this vital weight upon the struggling heart, which sinks with sorrow or beats quick with pain, or joy that ends in agony or faintness, in all the days of past and future, for in life there is no present, we can number how few, how less than few, wherein the soul forbears to pant for death and yet draws back, as from a stream in winter, though the chill be but a moment. I have one resource still in my science. I can call the dead and ask them what it is we dread to be. The sternest answer can but be the grave, and that is nothing. If I had never lived, that which I love had still been living. Had I never loved, that which I love would still be beautiful, happy, and giving happiness. What is she? What is she now? A sufferer for my sins. A thing I dare not think upon, or nothing. Within few hours I shall not call in vain. Yet in this hour I dread the thing I dare. Until this hour I never shrunk to gaze on spirit, good or evil. Now I tremble and feel a strange cold thaw upon my heart. But I can act even what I most abhor, and champion human fears. The night approaches.
The moon is rising broad and round and bright, and Huron snows, where never human foot of common mortal trod, we nightly tread. The city lies sleeping, the morn to deplore it may dawn on it weeping.
Sullenly, slowly, the black plague flew o'er it. Thousands lie lowly.
Tens of thousands shall perish. The living shall fly.
From the sick they shall cherish.
But nothing can vanquish the touch that they die from. Sorrow and anguish, and evil and dread, envelop a nation. The blessed are the dead, who see not the sigh of their own desolation. This work of a night, this wreck of a realm, this deed of our doing, for ages we've done and shall still be renewing.
Contain the hearts of men. Our footsteps are their graves. We only give to take again the spirits of our slaves. Away to our master Adamanes, for the great festival begins. We have outstayed the hour.
Hail to our master. Sovereigns, we are thine, and all that liveth is ours, and most things wholly so. Still, to increase our power, increasing thine demands our care, and we are vigilant. Thy late commands have been fulfilled to the utmost.
What is here? Mortal? Thou most rash and fatal wretch, bow down and worship!
I do know the man! A Magian of great power and fearful skill.
Bow down and worship, slave. What? Knowest thou not thine and our sovereign? Tremble and obey.
Prostrate thyself, child of the earth, or tread the worst.
I know it, and yet ye see I kneel not.
'Twill be taught thee.
'Tis taught already. Many a night on the earth, on the bare ground, have I bowed down my face and strewed my head with ashes. I have known the fullness of humiliation, for I sunk before my vain despair and knelt to my own desolation.
Dost thou dare refuse to Ahrimanes on his throne what the whole earth accords, beholding not the terror of his glory? Crouch, I say!
Bid him bow down to that which is above him, the overruling infinite, the maker who made him not for worship. Let him kneel, and we will kneel together.
Crush the worm!
Tear him in pieces!
Yes!
Hence I want! He's mine, prince of the powers invisible! This man is of no common order, as his port and presence here denote. His sufferings have been of an immortal nature, like our own. His knowledge and his powers and will, as far as is compatible with clay, which clogs the ethereal essence, have been such as clay hath seldom borne. His aspirations have been beyond the dwellers of the earth, and they have only taught him what we know, that knowledge is not happiness, and science but an exchange of ignorance for that which is another kind of ignorance. This is not all. The passions, attributes of earth and heaven, from which no power, nor being, nor breath from the worm upwards is exempt, have pierced his heart, and in their consequence made him a thing which I, who pity not, yet pardon those who pity. He is mine, and thine, it may be. Be it so or not, no other spirit in this region hath a soul like his, or power upon his soul.
What doth he hear, then?
Let him answer that.
Ye know what I have known, and without power I could not be amongst ye. But there are powers deeper still beyond. I come in quest of such, to answer unto what I seek.
What wouldst thou?
Thou canst not reply to me. Call up the dead. My question is for them.
Great Ahrimanes, Doth thy will avouch the wishes of this mortal?
Yea.
Whom wouldst thou uncharnel?
One without a tomb. Call up Astarte.
Shadow or spirit, whatever thou art, which still doth inherit the whole or a part of the form of thy birth, of the mould of thy clay which returned to the earth, reappear to the day. Bear what thou borest, the heart and the form, and the aspect thou worest, redeem from the worm. Appear, appear, appear. Who sent thee there requires thee here. And she appears.
Astarte. Can this be death? There's bloom upon her cheek. But now I see it is no living hue, but a strange hectic, like the unnatural red which autumn plants upon the perished leaf. It is the same, O God, that I should dread to look upon the same Astarte. No, no, I cannot speak to her, but bid her speak. Forgive me or condemn me.
By the power which hath broken the grave which enthralled thee, speak to him who hath spoken, or those who have called thee.
She is silent, and in that silence I am more than answered.
My power extends no further. Arimanes, Prince of Air, it rests with thee alone. Command her voice.
Spirit, obey this scepter.
Silent still. She is not of our order, but belongs to the other powers. Mortal, thy quest is in vain.
Hear me, hear me. Astarte, my beloved, speak to me. I have so much endured, so much endure. Look on me. Oh, the grave hath not changed thee more than I am changed for thee. Thou lovedst me too much as I loved thee. We were not made to torture thus each other, though it were the deadliest sin to love as we have loved. Say that thou loathest me not, that I do bear this punishment for both, that thou wilt be one of the blessed, and that I shall die. For hitherto all hateful things conspire to bind me in existence, in a life which makes me shrink from immortality, a future like the past. I cannot rest. Oh, I know not what I ask, nor what I seek. I feel but what thou art and what I am. And I would hear yet once before I perish the voice which was my music. Speak to me. For I have called on thee in the still night, startled the slumbering birds from the hushed boughs, and woke the mountain wolves, and made the caves acquainted with thy vainly echoed name, which answered me. Many things answered me, spirits and men, but thou wert silent all. Yet speak to me! I have outwatched the stars and gazed o'er heaven in vain in search of thee. Speak to me. I have wandered o'er the earth and never found thy likeness. Speak to me. Look on the fiends around. They feel for me. I fear them not and feel for thee alone. Speak to me. Though it be in wrath, but say, I reck not what, but let me hear thee once, this once, once more.
Manfred.
Say on. Say on. I live but in the sound. It is thy voice.
Manfred. Tomorrow ends thine earthly ills. Farewell.
Yet one word more. Am I forgiven?
Farewell.
Say, shall we meet again?
Farewell.
One word for mercy. Say thou lovest me.
Manfred.
She is gone and will not be recalled. Her words will be fulfilled. Return to the earth.
He is gone, Faust. This is to be a mortal and seek the things beyond mortality.
Yet see, he mastereth himself and makes his torture tributary to his will. Had he been one of us, he would have made an awful spirit.
Hast thou further question of our great sovereign or his worshippers?
None.
Then for a time.
Farewell.
We meet then.
Where? On the earth?
Even as thou wilt.
And for the grace accorded, I now depart a debtor. Fare ye well.
Is the hour. It wants but one till sunset. Promises a lovely twilight.
Are all things so disposed of in the tower as I directed?
All, my lord, are ready. Here is the key and casket.
It is well. Thou mayest retire. There is a calm upon me. Inexplicable stillness, which till now did not belong to what I knew of life. It will not last, but it is well to have known it, though but once. It hath enlarged my thoughts with a new sense.
My lord, the abbot of St. Maurice craves to greet your presence.
Peace be with Count Manfred.
Thanks, Holy Father. Welcome to these walls. Thy presence honors them and blesseth those who dwell within them.
Would it were so, Count. But I would fain confer with thee alone.
Herman, retire.
My lord.
What would, my reverend guest?
Thus, without prelude, age and zeal, my office and good intent must plead my privilege. Our near, though not acquainted, neighborhood may also be my herald. Rumors strange and of unholy nature are abroad and busy with thy name, a noble name for centuries. May he who bears it now transmit it unimpaired.
Proceed. I listen.
'Tis said thou holdest converse with the things which are forbidden to the search of man. That with the dwellers of the dark abodes, the many evil and unheavenly spirits which walk the valley of the shade of death, thou communest. I know that with mankind, thy fellows in creation, thou dost rarely exchange thy thoughts, and that thy solitude is as an anchorite's, were it but holy.
And what are they who do avouch these things?
My pious brethren, the scared peasantry, even thy own vassals, who do look on thee with most unquiet eyes. Thy life's in peril.
Take it.
I come to save and not destroy. I would not pry into thy secret soul. But if these things be sooth, there still is time for penitence and pity. Reconcile thee with the true church and through the church to heaven.
I hear thee. This is my reply. Whate'er I may have been or am doth rest between heaven and myself. I shall not choose a mortal to be my mediator. Have I sinned against your ordinances? Prove and punish.
No, my son, I did not speak of punishment, but penitence and pardon. with thyself the choice of such remains. And for the last, our institutions and our strong belief hath given me power to smooth the path from sin to higher hope and better thoughts. The first I leave to heaven. Vengeance is mine alone, so saith the Lord. And with all humbleness, his servant echoes back the awful word.
Old man, there is no power in holy men, nor charm in prayer, nor purifying form of penitence, nor outward lash, nor fast, nor agony. There is no future pang can deal that justice on the self condemned he deals on his own soul.
All this is well, for this will pass away and be succeeded by an auspicious hope, which shall look up with calm assurance to that blessed place which all who seek may win, whatever be their earthly errors, so they be atoned. And the commencement of atonement is the sense of its necessity. Say on, and all our church can teach thee shall be taught, and all we can absolve thee shall be pardoned.
When Rome's sixth emperor was near his last, the victim of a self-inflicted wound, to shun the torments of a public death from senates once his slaves, a certain soldier with show of loyal pity would have staunched the gushing throat with his officious robe. The dying Roman thrust him back and said, "It is too late."
And what of this?
I answer with the Roman, "It is too late."
It can never be so. To reconcile thyself with thine own soul and thy own soul with heaven? Hast thou no hope? 'Tis strange. Even those who do despair above yet shape themselves some fantasy on earth to which frail twig they cling like drowning men.
My father, I have had those earthly visions and noble aspirations in my youth to make my own the mind of other men, the enlightener of nations, and to rise, I knew not whither it might be to fall, but fall even as the mountain cataract, which having leapt from its more dazzling height, even in the foaming strength of its abyss, lies low but mighty still. But this is past. My thoughts mistook themselves.
And wherefore so?
I could not tame my nature down. The lion is alone, and so am I.
And why not live and act with other men?
Because my nature was averse from life.
Alas, I begin to fear that thou art past all aid from me and from my calling. Oh, yet so young, I still would...
Look on me. There is an order of mortals on the earth who do become old in their youth and die ere middle age without the violence of warlike death. Some perishing of pleasure, some of study, some worn with toil, some of mere weariness, some of disease, and some insanity, and some of withered or of broken hearts. For this last is a malady which slays more than are numbered in the lists of fate, taking all shapes and bearing many names. Look upon me, for even of all these things have I partaken, and of all these things one were enough. Then wonder not that I am what I am, but that I ever was, or having been, that I am still on earth.
Yet hear me still.
Old man, I do respect thine order and revere thine years. I deem thy purpose pious, but it is in vain. Think me not churlish. I would spare thyself far more than me in shunning at this time all further colloquy. And so, farewell.
And this should have been a noble creature. He hath all the energy which would have made a goodly frame of glorious elements, had they been wisely mingled. As it is an awful chaos. Light and darkness, and mind and dust, and passions and pure thoughts mixed, and contending without end or order, all dormant or restructive. He will perish. And yet he must not. I will try once more, for such are worth redemption, and my duty is to dare all things for a righteous end. I'll follow him, but cautiously, though surely.
bade me wait on you at sunset. He sinks beyond the mountain.
Doth he so? I will look on him.
My lord.
Glorious orb. The idol of early nature and the vigorous race of undiseased mankind. The giant sons of the embrace of angels with a sex more beautiful than they, which did draw down the erring spirits who can ne'er return. Most glorious orb, that were to worship ere the mystery of thy making was revealed, thou earliest minister of the Almighty, which gladdened on their mountaintops the hearts of the Chaldean shepherds till they poured themselves in orisons. Thou material God and representative of the unknown who chose thee for his shadow. Thou chief star, center of many stars which makest our earth endurable and temperest the hues and hearts of all who walk within thy rays. Sire of the seasons, monarch of the climes and those who dwell in them. For near or far, our inborn spirits have a tint of thee, even as our outward aspects. Thou dost rise and shine and set in glory. Fare thee well. I ne'er shall see thee more. As my first glance of love and wonder was for thee, then take my latest look. Thou wilt not beam on one to whom the gifts of life and warmth hath been of a more fatal nature. He is gone. I follow.
Tis strange enough. Night after night, for years, he hath pursued long vigils in this tower without a witness. I have been within it, so have we all been, oft times. But from it, or its contents, it were impossible to draw conclusions absolute of aught his studies tend to. Oh, to be sure, there is one chamber where none enter. Oh, that was a night indeed. I do remember 'twas twilight, as it may be now, and such another evening. Yon red cloud which rests on Iger's pinnacle so rested then, so like that it might be the same. The wind was faint and gusty, and the mountain snows began to glitter with the climbing moon. The Count Manfred was, as now, within his tower. How occupied, well, we knew not. But with him, the sole companion of his wanderings and watchings, her, whom of all earthly things that lived, the only thing he seemed to love, as he indeed by blood was bound to do. The Lady Astarte, his... Hush. Who comes here?
Where is your master?
Yonder, in the tower.
I must speak with
him. It is impossible. He is most private and must not be thus intruded.
Upon myself, I take the forfeit of my fault, if fault there be, but I must see him.
Thou hast seen him once this eve already.
Herman, I command thee. Knock and apprise the Count of my approach.
I dare not.
Oh, then it seems I must be herald of my own purpose.
Reverend Father, stop. I pray you pause.
Why so?
But step this way, and I will tell you further.
Stars are forth. The moon above the tops of the snow-shining mountains. Beautiful. I linger yet with nature, for the night
hath been to me a more familiar face than that of man, and in her starry shade of dim and solitary loveliness, I learned the language of another world. I do remember me that in my youth, when I was wandering, upon such a night I stood within the Colosseum's wall, midst the chief relics of almighty Rome. The trees which grew along the broken arches waved dark in the blue midnight, and the stars shone through the rents of ruin. From afar the watchdog bayed beyond the Tiber, and more near from out the Caesar's palace came the owl's long cry, and interruptedly of distant sentinels the fitful song begun and died upon the gentle wind. Some cypresses beyond the time-worn breach appeared to skirt the horizon, yet they stood within a bowshot, where the Caesars dwelt, and dwell the tuneless birds of night, amidst a grove which springs through leveled battlements and twines its roots with the imperial hearths. Ivy usurps the laurel's place of growth. But the gladiator's bloody circus stands, a noble wreck in ruinous perfection, while Caesar's chambers and the Augustan halls grovel on earth in indistinct decay. And thou didst shine, thou rolling moon, upon all this and cast a wide and tender light which softened down the hoar austerity of rugged desolation and filled up, as 'twere anew, the gaps of centuries, leaving that beautiful which still was so, and making that which was not, till the place became religion, and the heart ran o'er with silent worship of the great of old, the dead but sceptred sovereigns who still rule our spirits from their urns. 'Twas such a night. 'Tis strange that I recall it at this time. But I have found our thoughts take wildest flight even at the moment when they should array themselves in pensive order.
My good lord, I crave a second grace for this approach, but yet let my humble zeal offend by its abruptness. All it hath of ill recalls on me. Its good in the effect may light upon your head. Could I say heart? Could I touch that with words or prayers, I should recall a noble spirit which hath wandered, but is not yet all lost.
Thou knowest me not. My days are numbered and my deeds recorded. Retire, or 'twill be dangerous away.
Well, that does not mean to menace me.
Not I. I simply tell thee peril is at hand and would preserve thee.
What dost thou mean?
Look there. What dost thou see?
Nothing.
Look there, I say, and steadfastly. Now, tell me what thou seest.
Oh, that which should shake me, but I fear it not. I see a dusk and awful figure rise, like an infernal god from out the earth. His fact wrapped in a mantle, and his form robed as with angry clouds. He stands between thyself and me, but I do fear him not.
Thou hast no cause. He shall not harm thee, but his sight may shock thine old limbs into palsy. I say to thee, retire.
And I reply, never, till I have battled with this fiend. What doth he hear?
Why, aye, what doth he hear? I did not send for him. He is unbidden.
Alas, lost mortal, what with guests like these hast thou to do? I tremble for thy sake. Why doth he gaze on thee, and thou on him? Oh, he unveils his aspect. On his brow the thunder scars are graven. From his eye glares forth the immortality of hell. Avaunt!
Pronounce. What is thy mission?
Come!
What art thou, unknown being? Answer, speak!
Genius of this mortal, come! 'Tis time.
Prepared for all things, but deny the power which summons me. Who sent thee here?
Out no anon. Come. Come.
I have commanded.
things of an essence greater far than thine, and striven with thy masters, get thee hence.
Mortal, thine hour is come. Away, I say.
I knew and know my hour is come, but not to render up my soul to such as thee. Away. I'll die as I have lived, alone.
Then I will summon up my brethren. Rise, brethren, rise.
Come, mortal. Come now, my friend.
Come on, ye evil ones. Avaunt, I say. Ye have no power where piety hath power. And I do charge ye in the name of...
O man, we know ourselves our mission and thine order. Waste not thy holy words on idle uses. It were in vain. This man is forfeited. Once more I summon him. Away, away.
My power is come. Away, away.
I do defy ye. Though I feel my soul is ebbing from me, yet I do defy ye. Nor will I hence, while I have earthly strength to breathe my scorn upon ye, earthly breath to wrestle, though with spirits. What ye take shall be ta'en limb by limb.
Reluctant mortal!
Is this the Libertian who would so pervade the world invisible
and make himself almost our equal?
Can it be that thou art thus in love with life?
The very life which made thee wretched.
Thou false fiend, thou liest. My life is in its last hour, that I know, nor would redeem a moment of that hour. I do not combat against death, but thee and thy surrounding angels. My past power was purchased by no compact with thy crew, and gave ye no supremacy. I stand upon my strength. I do defy, deny, spurn back, and scorn ye.
How many crimes have made thee?
What are they to such as thee? Must crimes be punished but by other crimes and greater criminals? Back to thy hell. Thou hast no power upon me. That I feel. Thou never shalt possess me. That I know. What I have done is done. I bear within a torture which could nothing gain from thine. Thou didst not tempt me, and thou couldst not tempt me. I have not been thy dupe, nor am thy prey, but was my own destroyer, and will be my own hereafter. Back! Back, I say! Back, ye baffled fiends! The hand of death is on me, but not yours!
Oh, see, Manfred! You have made the demons disappear. Oh, alas, how pale thou art. Thy lips are white and thy breast heaves. And in thy gasping throat the accents rattle. Give thy prayers to heaven. Pray, albeit but in thought, but die not thus.
'Tis over. My dull eyes can fix thee not, but all things swim about me. And the earth heaves, as it were, beneath me. Fare thee well. Give me thy hand.
Oh. Cold. Cold. Even to the heart. But yet one prayer. Alas, how fares it with thee?
Old man. 'Tis not so difficult to die.
He's gone. His soul hath ta'en its earthless flight. Whither, I dread to think. But he is gone.
Manfred was Joseph Milson. The chamois hunter was Conrad Nelson. The abbot, Jonathan Keeble. The witch of the Alps and Astarte, Emily Peton. and Herman was Henry DeVas. The spirits were Ruth Alexander Rubin, Finola Doherty, Conrad Nelson, Jonathan Keeble, Henry DeVas, and Emily Peton. The singers were Rhianne Taylor, Caroline Locke, Michael Gibson, Finola Doherty, Conrad Nelson, Connor Biano, and Catherine Longworth. Original music was composed and performed by Ollie Fox. Manfred, by Lord Byron, was adapted and directed in Salford by Pauline Harris.
Next week's drama on three is Rosmersholm by Henrik Ibsen. That begins at 9 o'clock next Sunday.
Opera on Three presents Richard Strauss's bittersweet comedy, Der Rosenkavalier. A story of love, scheming, and self-sacrifice set to an opulent score. The star cast includes René Fleming, Alice Coote, and Sophie Bevan. Der Rosenkavalier, live from the Royal Opera House next Saturday afternoon at